And welcome back. It is the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT 89.5 FM. With me in the studio, of course, is Phil Conlon, with a lot of labor experience. How you doing, Phil?
Good, Phil. And I'm noticing that Mexico swore in a new president on Saturday, and it may not be more of the same.
Not at all. This is very significant, in my opinion. I agree. We should note that for our listeners, I know we'll want it affirmed. The biggest guest who was attending in terms of the attention of the president, Mr. Obrador, was Jeremy Corbyn. And the day before he was sworn in, Jeremy Corbyn was a guest at the home of the new president, Obrador. And Obrador was once the mayor of Mexico City. So we know this is he has a record. He has done things. He has actually delivered on promises. He's the most popular mayor that Mexico City has ever had. By the way, he won the election probably 6 years ago against Mr. Nito, who this time was shellacked by Obrador. And something I had trouble following, I didn't understand, but I think it's very important to get underlined, is that this was not just a personality Obrador. There is a new political movement and party that he leads, and that it has captured most of the state governments of Mexico, and it has captured the legislature. So, you know, when we were getting into this and starting to understand what was unfolding, there was a question, is this a personality that will be isolated? No, he has a tremendous base. But the other important individual who was invited and attended in Mexico was President Maduro of Venezuela. And yes, he was there. And the Canadian media has not played that up. Neither have they played up the presence of Jeremy Corbyn. By the way, President Obrador put his arm around Jeremy Corbyn in the garden of his home, and he said, this should be the next president, prime minister of Britain. I hope, he said. This is a significant phenomenon, and it's. We were just talking about the arrogant Mr. Macron and one of the plastic statues that they decorate the idea of neoliberalism with. Nito was that in Mexico, and Nito was so craven that on his last day of office, he awarded Kushner, the son-in-law of Trump, the highest civilian order can be awarded from Mexico, the Aztec Eagle. And he just floored the population. They thought, well, thank you, Nito, that's you. I mean, why in the world? And I guess the short answer might be just pure money. I don't know. But it shows, and then about Maduro and Kushner and all these, the party of Nito threatened to make a scene if Maduro came to the actual swearing in. And now nobody told him not to be there, but he played the smart approach, and I assume others agreed, that Maduro said he had other business to do, he was invited to the reception following, and of course he'd been there already at the invitation of Obrador. So it's very important to know. But Nito, his party was trying to do a sabotage job on the inauguration of the most popular elected president since Cardenas. Cardenas is the one, never forget it, who nationalized the American oil companies in Mexico, which almost led to a war. Roosevelt and the others wanted to attack Mexico. We're talking about history. Cardenas is his antecedent. He respects and as all, a great majority of people of Mexico respected the decisions of Cardenas. Lázaro Cárdenas was a very radical president. Very popular. So that's what we have. Now, what is more significant in the presence of Maduro is that Nito, of course, was part of the gang that was trying to get Maduro and overthrow him by any means, by violence. They would probably prefer it. They form a group in South America called the Lima Group, K Canada is a member of the Lima Group. They meet, and they've caused all kinds of trouble. They've been trying to overthrow the government of Nicaragua. They did overthrow the government of Brazil. They brought about a right-wing government in Argentina, Ecuador. We know the problems faced by Mr. Assange because of this. So they're on a roll. They're very cocky. But they hit a rock here in Obrador. And this is now, you know, we've all had our, you know, he wears the sash, gave the speech. The bans have gone. Now this is going to be interesting because attempt to get Maduro is going to be weakened because Mexico is a major voice, and a powerful country. And it is a popularly – the people of Mexico participate in their politics. nobody's ever been able to ignore the masses of Mexico. If you want to see physical representation of it, look at the paintings of Diego Rivera and Orozco, Siguiros. So this is very significant. And by the way, there's another detail about this that I think we should note and criticize, actually. The media in Canada today, I was reading the Toronto Star and Globe and Mail, they're talking about the signatures in Buenos Aires, the moment when, you will recall, Trudeau said and Freeland said, we're not going to go to Argentina to sign any agreements. We're going to the G20 meetings. We're going to postpone signing. Then they signed. And that was, you know, the humiliation. By the way, the humiliation was on the face of Trudeau, if you looked at him. If you watch it, go online, and the three presidents sign. And then they, after the signatures, Trump held up his document and Nieto held up his document and Trudeau sat with his hands in front of him. Then when there were obviously people looking and kind of looking uncomfortable, he started clapping to show, okay, I'm aboard, but I'm miserable. That was the message I got. I'm here, but I'm really miserable. But now in the reporting, some people have gotten confused. They were all offended. On this show, we talked about it. It's called the USMCA, isn't it?
MCA, yeah.
USMCA. Yeah. That's what Trump calls it.
United States Marines.
Yeah. United States Marine Corps. Yeah. And naturally, this grates people when they see that because, well, number three in the list there. So now there's been an explanation, and I've actually heard some trade unions say that, well, Canada has taken a bold step. It's now renamed it the CAM blah, blah. I don't know how it works out. It looks like Kamusk to me. I don't know what that is. But anyhow, that's the show. See, we're there. And today in the Toronto Star, one of their writers said, instead of being USMCA, it's now CA blah, blah. And then they said, and whatever, I got news for you. In Mexico, they have put their own name first, and they have their letters for it. So each country is putting their own country in the front, and the other countries are just kind of shrugging. But in the Star and the Globe, they didn't mention that Mexico has done this. It's just like, who are they? And I got news for you. They are big stuff. Mexico is a major country, and they're going to have a lot of impact. Mr. Obrador is going to introduce, he's already done it, things that unheard of. And we talked a little bit with Sid Ryan, Harry Glaspie. Curious. One of the first things, they're going to have free Wi-Fi for everybody, just free, you know, and everybody gets Wi-Fi. And they're also going to, they've already begun to introduce plebiscites. And if you want to see this discomfort in the Anglo media, they're saying this is very troubling because what he says, well, you know, we're going to ask the people. We're going to tell them we have a little problem here. The former president decided to spend $13 billion on a really huge, grand, Hollywood-style airport, and the masses don't want that. And they told us they didn't want it. But we're going, so we have a plebiscite. And so they did. They asked the people, you know, you for this, you not. And they're going to do more of that. I was thinking, how about Oshawa having a plebiscite, you know? What would you like to do with the General Motors plant? Could we perhaps turn it into production of electrical automobiles and make them the new autonomous vehicles, and we get a twofer, and say to the Ottawa government, we want money for that, and we're going to do it. You know, would you like that? And just say, guess what? The people would like that. Actually, in a previous interview with Harry Glaspie, I hit my nose on the microphone. Don't ever do that. Someone asked Fidel when the revolution happened in Cuba. It was Jean-Paul Sartre. He said, so how do you decide what to do? What's your plan? And he said, well, we ask the people what their needs are, what they want, you know, what they think they need. And Sartre says, well, suppose they said they want the moon. And Fidel said, well, that would mean they need it. So anyway, there's that.
Well, Phil, boy, that's great. There was an incident last week which led the Toronto Star today to have a headline without a tiny bit of irony saying, Ukrainian government thinks the German Navy should be in the Sea of Azov. well, I was waiting for the joke, but no, they didn't. Nobody knows.
It might be a good place to bury a Navy.
Of course. I mean, they've done it before. They've been buried there.
Well, the Sea of Azov isn't actually sailable for naval vessels.
Yeah.
It's only 21 feet deep.
Oh.
You had to be very
careful. By all means, send the German Navy.
Send your Navy. We were thinking we would like to have a museum here of the German Navy.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be great? And then you get the tour boat. And that was an aircraft carrier. We had to put it on the side, by the way. Sorry about that. But it's a lot of fun for the kids. They can climb all over. You know, that Sea of Azov. Yes. Well, my question about this is the government in Ottawa and all the applauding parties who, you know, the trained SEALs who agree with them on everything, is this a party of provocation and war? Or are they, you know, or do they understand international law, treaties, et cetera? Because this is actually what happened there hasn't been explained to the Canadian people in any factual way. It's been simply told Putin did it. And now, as you know, Putin did it is the explanation for everything.
So all anybody needs to know, Putin did it.
Right. You know, if Dallas doesn't make the playoffs, it's going to be Putin for sure. I know he doesn't like the Dallas Cowboy owners, so already I got a motive. So it was a simple matter in terms of laws of the sea and particularly that specific place. The Kerch Straits is very dangerous. It's not easy to navigate. And historically, they have pilot ships who take you – not pilot ships, pilots. I've been aboard boats who pilots come. Someday I'll tell that story. But anyhow – you have to tell them you're there, what kind of vessel you are, and you have a right to pass through there. They're not saying you can't go through, but you have to follow the procedure. And Ukraine has followed the procedure. They've actually had naval vessels in September pass through the straits, but they observed the protocols necessary to do it safely. But this time, it appears, rather obviously, they decided to ignore the agreed-upon procedures, which is in a treaty in 2003. So the Canadian government ought to be very clear. Do we support a state which allows its navy, that's a military, its military to approach a sensitive area and ignore the protocols for passing through that area? Nobody said they could not pass. That was never said. A sensitive situation exists there. A bridge has been built, and a leader, a personality of note, I can't tell you what his role was, stood up in, I guess, the parliament of Ukraine and said that we ought to blow up that bridge and destroy it. Well, you know, the guy whose bridge it is has heard you say that. And then your war vessels come and they say, we're going through here today. Except they don't, and you say, stop. And they say, no, no, we're going through. See, again, and we've talked about this in the last week, but you've got to be reminded, if you're in a potentially war situation, people going to be fired on, you're supposed to back away. That's a state decision, and you have to say it clearly. No captain decides that stuff. That has to be state to state. Now, you can argue the Ukrainians have a right to go through there without any checking or any taking a pilot aboard. But you have to do that. You have to argue. But Canada is saying, oh, no, whatever this character, the chocolate king of Ukraine, whose poll numbers are 6%, he's almost like Yeltsin, this guy. This is how low he's gotten. He can go through there and create a conflagration. Well, then Canada is behaving in a provocative way. You're inciting that kind of behavior. And it's not going to be any loss to Canada to say, wait a minute, we observe international protocols. We think the treaty should be respected, and we want the parties to negotiate. But if you say, oh, no, you know, we've got to beef him up. He's decided to make trouble for a major nuclear power, and we're going to write a blank check for him. We're going to provide military support. We're going to provide political propaganda support. What you said, Toronto Star, that was propaganda. But what happened at Kerch Strait is simply a nautical issue, you know. So that's what, you know, we need to point out to people. And we have to ask the government. And, of course, the NDP is not going to ask. The Green Party is not going to ask. They're all in favor of, oh, no, no, we like the chocolate king. We're going to do whatever he likes. By the way, Tymoshenko is a pretty rough character, and she's running. She could beat him easy. Nobody else is allowed to run that I can see. Anyhow, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. We really got to thank Jessica. I got to say, we're on Facebook and SoundCloud, and please check us out, and we'll see you next week.